postpartum body odor. It is a totally natural phenomenon because your body chemistry changes after giving birth. And so sometimes that means that what worked before is no longer effective. But I am excited to say that now there is a solution for that stubborn odor. The Sugar Sugar Postpartum Deodorant is a completely natural deodorant made by a postpartum mom who went through it herself. And it works by eliminating and preventing bacterial body odor without covering up your skin's comforting smell to your baby while giving you 12 hours of odor control. And let me tell you, it actually works. Here at the house, we've all been trying it and loving it. Now, before you think, ew, you're sharing a deodorant with your husband and daughter, let me explain that this full body deodorant comes in a convenient pump applicator that lets you apply it anywhere on your body with no bacteria traveling on the deodorant, so no ew involved. We also love that the Sugar Sugar Postpartum Deodorant has a delightful natural scent of USDA certified organic extracts that smell like a pink sugar cookie with lemon frosting. I thought this would be a little strange, but it's actually amazing. Also, the Sugar Sugar Postpartum Deodorant is free from artificial fragrances and any kind of senoestrogens or herbs that can interfere with breastfeeding. Find your Sugar Sugar Postpartum Deodorant at postpartumdeodorant.com. That's postpartumdeodorant.com and use the code BIRTHFUL for 20% off through the month of May. Get your Sugar Sugar Postpartum Deodorant now at postpartumdeodorant.com and start smelling more like yourself again. Now that we're in full spring mode, I am constantly reaching for my Jenny Kane Crop Cashmere Cocoon Cardigan because I find it is the perfect level of warm and cozy for when there's still a light chill in the air, but I don't want a coat. And like so many of Jenny Kane's bestsellers, this 100% cashmere cardigan is just so versatile. So I can wear it on its own over dresses, short sleeves, long sleeves, with slacks or jeans. It works with all of it, which is a really good thing because I just never want to take it off. And of course, this cardigan has the impeccable and luxurious level of craftsmanship that you can expect from all of Jenny Kane's products. Jenny Kane is a California brand through and through, and so think minimalist and effortless, but totally refined. Because they are a sponsor of the podcast, for a limited time, our listeners can get 15% off their first order while supporting our show. Go to jennykane.com and use the code BIRTHFUL15 to get 15% off. Now, I know that I go on and on about Jenny Kane sweaters because I'm frankly obsessed, but they also have everything you could want to finish out your look. They have dresses, shoes, and even a stunning collection of home essentials. Curate a wardrobe that never goes out of style at jennykane.com. As a Birthful listener, get 15% off your first order when you use the code BIRTHFUL15 at checkout. That's 15% off your first order at jennykane.com, promo code BIRTHFUL15. Let getting dressed be one less thing to worry about. Welcome to Birthful Mighty Parent or Parent-to-Be. I'm Adriana Lozada, and we've got a birth story for you today as part of our Birth Beyond the Clinical Experience series. And my guest for this is multidimensional mama, musician, healer, and birth worker, Danelia Arechiga, who's here to share her birth experience as a gestational surrogate. Now, Danelia was planning to give birth at a birth center, but as she approached 41 weeks with no sign of labor in sight, she wasn't sure she'd be able to have the unmedicated birth she hoped for, let alone experience the fetal ejection reflex. And toward the beginning of the story, you'll hear why she felt so strongly about birthing this way for this baby, for their intended parents, and for herself. I find this story to be a great example of the resilience of the birthing body when the birthing person knows about the importance of supporting the physiological processes happening within their body and then advocates for them even when experiencing interventions. And this is an episode that goes really hand in hand with our previous episode with Dr. Sarah Buckley about the birthing hormones and oxytocin's protagonist role in creating positive feedback loops to make labor more efficient, as well as how the activating sensations and beneficial stressors of birth help baby get ready for life in the outside world. So, if you haven't listened to that episode yet, make sure you go back to it afterward. You're listening to Birthful, here to inform your intuition. Welcome, Danelia. I am so happy to have you here on the show to tell us your story. And before we get into that, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and how you identify?
Sure. Thank you for having me. I live here in Long Beach, California, which is Tongva and Ahashman territory. I am a single mom. I have a daughter, and her birth actually led me into birth work. So I've been a birth worker for almost as long as she's been alive. And I'm also an artist. I'm a musician, a writer, a songwriter. The name that I've kind of given myself, the nickname, is the multidimensional mommy. Because I realized a few years ago that I didn't want to just be confined to birth work, that I could actually bring more of my gifts and my skills in other elements of my life into my birth work and vice versa.
And I think that's a wonderful point of view to take into life, because we all have all these different labels and all different hats that we wear. And especially as we become parents, right? We get that big new label of parent, of mom, of dad, whatever it is you want your kids to call you. And how that shifts how you define yourself. So being able to integrate all of those is such a crucial part of being a parent.
Absolutely. And I think just being a human, you know, just allowing ourselves to really step into all of the roles we play and not being boxed into just one, which often happens when we're parents. So I'm exploring that a lot right now.
What motivated you to become a gestational carrier?
Yeah. So my older sister, she has been working in fertility for a long time. And she had asked me if I would be open to being a surrogate for a couple that she had been working with for quite some time. And at the time, I was very interested because, well, even now, I mean, I only have one child. I don't plan on having any more, but I really, really loved being pregnant and I loved giving birth, but I just don't want any more children of my own. And so it was kind of an opportunity for them and for me to experience pregnancy again, and then to be able to help this family complete themselves with this child that they've been longing for so long.
And so tell us broad strokes of how that process went of figuring out, because you hadn't done this before. It was your first time as well. So figuring out how to have those important conversations and determine who would be sort of taking the lead during what time, right?
Yeah, I think that my experience as a birth worker definitely helped the family feel more comfortable letting me kind of make some of those recommendations. For example, I knew right away that if I was going to work with them, that I would want to try for a natural birth, because I had a natural birth with my daughter. And it was just really important to me, especially because the actual pregnancy itself was so medicalized, right? Because there's a lot of medicalization that needs to happen in order for me to get pregnant in this way. And so I really wanted it to be as natural as possible. And they were completely supportive of that. They let me know that they trusted my experience and my suggestions. And that made me feel really comfortable moving forward with them. Additionally, I told them from the beginning that I wanted to possibly give birth at home or at a birth center. I wanted to avoid the hospital if possible. And also because it was important to me that they were as much a part of it as possible. And I knew that they would get a little bit more involved at a birth center with the care of midwives.
And so as things progress and you're getting closer to that due date, what were their thoughts as things also got close? Were they showing any anxiety in terms of place of birth or in terms of the process? What were their concerns?
Yeah, I think we all experienced a lot of uncertainty and anxiety leading up to the birth because I did pass the 40-week due date and we knew that we had a time limit with the birth center, meaning that if I didn't give birth by 41 weeks and 6 days, that I would have to be transferred to the hospital for an induction. So there was a lot of anxiety. We were in communication that whole week, just really exploring all of the options. And it was difficult.
What was going through your mind and what were you doing at that point when you're seeing this deadline of transfer to the hospital at 40 weeks, 6 days, if you're not, you know, in labor by then?
Yeah, I was pulling out all the stops. I was really leaning on my community more than anything. I had a wonderful doula named Carissa Raya, who has been featured on this podcast as well. And I also had a good friend of mine, Bankit Zani from Indija Mama, who really helped me with a lot of body work in the weeks leading up to the birth and also the evening before the scheduled induction. She stayed up with me all night and just, we did reboso techniques. We did herbal remedies. We did pretty much anything and everything we knew of to try to help the cervix at least get started so that the induction wouldn't be so intense.
Was that creating any contractions? Were you seeing any changes?
I was. I was contracting pretty frequently, but they weren't very strong. And so, as we know, we really can't force our bodies into being ready if they're not. It's like the saying, you know, when ripe, they will fall. When the fruit is ripe on the tree, you don't have to pull it. It'll just fall to the ground, right? So I think it did help, absolutely. But I had to entertain the possibility that it might not completely put me into full-on active labor.
So then how did it all start? You're past your quote-unquote due date. What's going on?
So when I passed the due date, the midwives were able to administer a Foley catheter to get me started so that when I went in for the induction the following day, I could hopefully come in with some progress already. And then that's when Bankit Zani and I had worked on the reboso circuit and the herbal teas and things like that. And I was able to get from 1 centimeter when they put the Foley bulb in to 3 centimeters when I showed up to the hospital. So it did make a difference.
And I want to explain what a Foley catheter is because, yeah, I was going to say you must have had some dilation if they were able to put it in because you need to be at least 1 centimeter for it to be inserted. And then it's a little balloon that gets pumped with water and mechanically expands the cervix with that pressure from the water inflating. And it continues creating that pressure until 3 centimeters, because then the balloon can't go anymore. That's as big as it gets. And then it falls out. So that's what you experienced.
Right. Right. So they put it in, I did the circuit and then it fell out on its own. And so that's when I went to the birth center to be assessed. And they did say that I was 3 centimeters, but baby's position wasn't ideal. They thought that baby might be asynclitic, and also the cervix was posterior. So then I went back home and tried a little bit longer to avoid the induction.
What time are we talking about?
This is like 3 a.m.
And your deadline for induction is what time?
It was the next morning, 7 a.m.
So you're like 4 hours away from having to, you know, go in.
Yeah.
So middle of the night, you're doing all these things. They're slowly making change. Then what happened?
I went home and I intended to continue working on the circuit that I had been practicing. Different things like squats, reboso, you know, walking, knees up, those types of movements. But I was really tired. I was really tired from all the movement, all the anxiety, all the pressure, the contractions that I was feeling. So I ended up taking a nap and I ended up sleeping longer than I intended to. But honestly, I feel like it was needed, you know, it was necessary because my body needed to rest and I needed energy to go into the hospital. I needed to prepare myself for that.
And I love a nap during early labor. It can be so restorative and sort of get you out of that thinking brain and let your body do the process.
Absolutely. I needed that for sure. I think I just needed time to process what was about to happen, you know? So the majority of my morning, the next morning when I did have to go into the hospital, was spent moving really slowly and really cherishing every last minute that I had with my daughter before I had to go to the hospital. We just spent some time loving up on each other before that.
And where are the intended parents in this process right now?
So they were home and they were notified that I would be going into the hospital. So their plan was to meet me at the hospital when I got there.
Were they going to let both of them into the room?
No, unfortunately, only one of them was allowed in, as well as my doula. So the hospital's policy was that only a doula and one additional support person could be with me. So the mom ended up coming with me to the hospital. I was scheduled to be admitted at 9 a.m. And I believe we got there a little bit closer to 9:30, 10, because I was showering. I was kind of dragging my feet a little, if I'm being honest. And so by the time I got checked in, I was actually officially checked around 11 a.m. And I was about 4 centimeters at that point. It was getting more intense. I was starting to feel more excited, like, okay, we're here. It is what it is. Let's just do what we do best, right? As birth workers, what do? We turn that hospital room into a birth cave and we make it dark. And we, you know, if the client wants it, of course, and I did, I wanted it to be dark. I wanted it to smell good. I wanted to have my music. And my doula was amazing. Carissa was amazing at creating that space for me. She kind of just recreated the cave that I had created in my room in the hospital. And I immediately felt a lot better. And I was like, okay, let's do this.
So you made the space yours. Was your body ready to go?
It was. It started to work. It started to move. The contractions got more intense and more, you know, closer together. I was pretty much left alone for the majority of the day. Even though I was there for an induction, I wasn't actually induced. The doctor and the nurses had spoken to me about needing Pitocin if I wasn't progressing by a certain time. I just kept asking for more time. And I think that being a birth worker definitely helped me in this situation because I felt very confident advocating for myself. But yeah, my body was working. And before I knew it, I started feeling pressure, you know, and I started going to the bathroom a lot. And that's usually a sign that things are moving along because we feel like we need to poop, but really it's the pressure of the baby moving down. So that was exciting.
Yum, delicious, tasty, super clean water. That is what we now happily drink, thanks to our AquaTrue Reverse Osmosis Water Purifier. It's just so much easier for us to stay hydrated. For me, that is vital because I am prone to getting headaches, and so being well hydrated really helps with that. And if you're pregnant or nursing, being well hydrated is also vital for you because good hydration is key during this time of life. AquaTrue purifiers use a 4-stage reverse osmosis purification process that removes 15 times more contaminants than ordinary pitcher filters, and they have water purifiers to fit every type of home, from installation-free countertop purifiers to higher capacity under-sink options. They even have a Wi-Fi connected purifier and mineral boost options. Also, their filters are affordable and long-lasting, with just one set of filters from their classic purifier making the equivalent of 4,500 bottles of water. Using AquaTrue water can even improve the taste of your coffee, tea, and anywhere else you use water to cook, like for making rice, quinoa, stocks, or soups. I truly can't say enough good things about my AquaTrue. AquaTrue also comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee and even makes a great gift. Today, my listeners receive 20% off any AquaTrue purifier. Just go to aquatrue.com. That's AquaTrue.com and enter code BIRTHFUL at checkout. That's 20% off any AquaTrue water purifier when you go to aquatrue.com and use the promo code BIRTHFUL. Today's episode is sponsored by Acorns, and sometimes I find that investing gets put off because it doesn't seem urgent or because with our busy lives, we may not have the time to research and manage said investments. which is why I so appreciate that Acorns makes it easy to start automatically saving and investing for your future, and that you don't need a lot of money or expertise to invest with Acorns. In fact, you can get started with just your spare change. So, for example, I take advantage of Acorns' roundup feature where they round up the purchase amounts I make in my linked account to the nearest dollar, and then they automatically transfer that to my invest account portfolio. Also, Acorns can recommend an expert-built portfolio that fits you and your money goals, then automatically invests your money for you. For me, that's easy peasy investing. Head to acorns.com/birthful or download the Acorns app to start saving and investing for your future today. Client testimonial may not be representative of all clients. Tier 1 compensation provided. Compensation provides an incentive to positively promote Acorns. View important disclosures at acorns.com/birthful. Investing involves risk, including loss of principal. Please consider your objectives, risk tolerance, and Acorns fees before investing. Acorns Advisors LLC Acorns is an SEC-registered investment advisor. Brokerage services are provided to clients of Acorns by Acorns Securities LLC, member FINRA SIPC. For more information, visit acorns.com. I know that when people are giving birth, you're going into altered states. You're going deep into labor land, and it gets to a point where you're not really aware of time and space and how things are going. It's all a really a big blur as you focus inward. And you're talking to me about having, you know, that outside looking in birth worker perspective. Were you able to do both of those?
I still experience some moments of doubt, you know, like, oh my gosh, this is going to take forever. They're going to give me Pitocin. But my body was telling me the opposite. My body was saying, no, you're fine. This is happening now. I went from 5 centimeters to 8 really quickly, like in the matter of an hour, maybe. And this was right around the time that the doctor was saying, okay, we've given you lots of time. You're here for an induction, but you haven't been induced. We're going to have to give you Pitocin soon. And that's when I was like, actually, you need to check me because I feel like I'm going to push. So I was able to, you know, access that higher consciousness that we tend to experience in labor, especially if it's an undisturbed birth, right? I remember at one point putting my headphones on, these headphones that I have on right now, and just going into my zone and really like speaking out the sounds that my body needed to allow myself to move through these different intense surges that I was having, and listening to a mantra in my ears that reminded me that I was safe and that I was secure and that I was going to be okay. So it was really interesting having both of those perspectives as the birthing person and then as an experienced doula, you know, knowing what was about to happen. It's still, you know, so magical and so unique.
So you're deep in the zone. Things are intense. You're 8 centimeters. You were in the bathroom and suddenly you get more pressure. Tell me about it.
I always tell people, like, when you give birth, that intensity, it's indescribable, because after it's over, it's almost like you forget about it. It's almost like you can't verbalize it, you know? But I do remember very distinctly feeling the baby moving down into my pelvis. I could actually feel her almost like scraping the insides of my pelvis. And as much as that does not sound comfortable, I mean, it's not, but physiologically I could feel it. And it was amazing to me because I don't remember feeling that with my daughter's birth. And it told me that this baby was coming soon. You know, with the contractions, I could actually feel her moving down. And so I told them, you know, I feel like I'm pushing. You know, you might want to check me. And they were in the middle of a shift change. So they were kind of like, okay, we'll get to you in a little bit. You know, we're updating our next staff member. And my doula too was like, you're going to want to check her. Like I was grunting. I was like actively pushing, you know, with the fetal ejection reflex, as you know, you can't really stop it. So it was just happening. And it all happened so fast. The baby just kind of came out. Before the doctor even could make it into the room. And the new nurse that had just come on was kind of like, you know, at a loss for what to do because it happened so fast.
Let's paint a picture.
Okay.
Because I want to know. So where are you in the room right now?
So I had gone from the bathroom to the bed and I was trying to tell them, like, come check me because I need to push.
And what position were you in?
So I was actually on my back. They did end up checking me, but it took a little while. And by the time they checked me, they were like, oh, you're complete. And I was like, I know, I've been telling you I have to push. And so I was actually on my back flat, which I was not happy about, you know, but it happened so fast. It was hard to get into a position that felt better. And yeah, baby just kind of slipped right out into one of the nurse's arms.
So the new nurse did get there. So it wasn't just you and your doula, Carissa.
So the previous nurse had just left the room. The new nurse was on. She had just called in some backup from the other nurses on the floor. So there was about three nurses in there with us, plus the intended mother and my doula. And, you know, I was saying, I have to push. Some of the nurses were like, okay, just breathe, you know, don't push yet. The doctor's coming. One of them kind of looked at me and was like, if you have to push, just push. Don't worry about it. You know, like we'll catch this baby. I was like, thank you. Like I know this baby's going to come out whether you catch it or not, but I appreciate that reassurance. You know, it wasn't even like I had to push. I just had to release her.
Did she do two pushes, one the head and one the rest of the body, or did she just full on fly out?
I think I pushed a little. Carissa looked and she was like, oh yeah, I see her head. And then the next one, she was out.
So then after the baby's out, as a surrogate and an intended mother in the room, like what happens? How does bonding happen? Yeah.
So Carissa actually facilitated the mom being more involved because she was kind of standing on the sidelines and Carissa was like, come here, you know, your baby's coming. And I even told her, I said, take your sweater off because as soon as she comes, we want you to, you know, her to go to you. And so she was kind of like right next to me, just watching it all unfold. And baby ended up coming onto my chest onto my belly briefly while they just assessed her. And then they moved her over to the warmer. And then the mom went with her to the warmer and just kind of talked to her and was there with her. So my doula and I were both trying to facilitate bonding right away in whatever way we could. But because, you know, the doctor wasn't there, it was a little bit of a delay with getting baby right onto mom's chest. So it took a little while, but as soon as, you know, mom was able to hold baby and then dad was able to come into the room because he had been in the chapel, actually. He was in the chapel at the hospital. And it was really beautiful once they could all be together. And I was just so relieved. I just had such a feeling of relief, like, oh, that pressure had finally just subsided. And finally, she was here with her parents. It was beautiful.
Yay. And had they seen a birth before?
I believe she said she had seen one when she was in her college years. She had to observe a hospital. But she told me later, she's like, I've never seen anything like that. Like a natural birth, like just primal like that, you know, just baby comes shooting out. Dad has a background as a firefighter and a paramedic. And so he's seen a lot of births, but like in very emergency situations. So, even, you know, entering the pregnancy and wanting to go natural and things like that, it was a little bit different for them because the experiences he had with birth were all very much emergencies.
Right. Which is probably why he was in the chapel.
Right.
Which is so hard for him.
That makes sense.
Right. Also so hard for him. Like I can't see what's going on. I can only imagine it. Let me go find some peace however I can.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm really glad he did that because I think it kept him busy, you know, and he was with us in his own way.
For the mom who was in the room, as soon as the baby came out, what was her response?
I think she was just in awe, you know, just in awe that this baby was finally here. Honestly, I haven't had a chance to really sit down with them and really ask those questions. Like what did that feel like? I would love to actually sit with them and have that conversation. But from what they did tell me, she was just very grateful that, you know, I was able to give birth to their baby. And also that I was so committed to the natural birth, you know, like I don't think they understood how committed I was, but I was trying to avoid that induction at all costs.
Did she feel as committed as you, or did she have any hesitation?
She would ask me often, like, are you sure about this? Are you sure you don't want medication? And I'm like, no, I think I'm okay. You know, for me, the need to have an unmedicated birth is more about limiting the amount of recovery as well. I also wanted to be able to feel what it felt like to give birth. If I had some type of epidural or pain relief, I may not have felt that intense feeling of the baby moving into the pelvis, you know, but that's just me. I wanted to feel that. A lot of people are like, that does not sound good. Give me the meds now. And that's totally fine, you know, but that's just my perspective. So yeah, I think they were really grateful and they were really amazed at my commitment to an unmedicated birth.
And the baby came out screaming and pinked up and was doing great and fine?
She was doing well. She did have some complications after birth. She had a small hole in her lungs that they discovered the second day of life. So she ended up having to go to the NICU for a while. And that kind of affected our postpartum plans because originally, in an effort to facilitate bonding for the parents and also to stimulate breast milk, we had planned to stay at a hotel after birth so that I could do skin to skin with the baby to get breast milk going. And then they could do skin to skin with her as well so they could bond with her. But because she ended up being admitted to the NICU for about a week, we didn't get to do that. And so I was pumping. I was trying really hard to make sure that I got some type of breast milk so I could give it to them so that it could help her, especially because she was in the NICU. And they were able to do that. They were able to give her the milk that I was pumping.
So as part of the surrogacy, you guys included or negotiated that you would make sure your milk came in and provide breast milk for them?
Yes.
For how long?
The goal was 3 months, but my milk supply ended up dropping around the second or third week postpartum. And that just goes to show you how powerful hormones are, right? Because if that baby's not with the birthing person, it's really hard to facilitate breast milk production. And I was eating and drinking all the things that help boost the hormones responsible for breast milk. But I think because there was a disconnection, you know, as far as it not being my baby, it's just very different. Actually, I breastfed her a couple of times at the breast directly. And it was such an interesting experience because I did feel oxytocin. I did feel a letdown, but it's not quite the same because it's not my baby. You know, I could only compare it to my birth with my daughter. And it just, there's something was a little different. So I'm actually really proud of my ability to pump as long as I did because, you know, not having baby nearby to stimulate that can be a little tricky.
Right. And you didn't have, you know, 24/7 access to skin to skin with this baby so that they could eat on demand 12 times, 10 times a day, however many times they wanted. So I can see that being a little trickier. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. But I'm really happy with the way that we were able to make it work as long as we did.
Being a surrogate and giving birth, what was the hardest part of it all for you?
I think the hardest part towards the end was considering having to go to the hospital first and foremost, because it was so far from what I wanted. I only agreed to be the surrogate because the intended parents were open to a home birth or a birth center or working with midwives. So when that possibility came up, it was really, really hard for me to accept because it was just so far from what I wanted. And I feel like my body just shut down because I was like, oh, I don't want to go there, you know. But it was a great experience. And I'm really glad that I got a chance to challenge myself to face that obstacle and still overcome it. But I can't attribute that to, you know, just myself. It was really a community effort from all the support I received throughout my whole pregnancy and birth and postpartum. One of the questions I get asked a lot about the surrogacy experience is if I experienced any type of grief or sadness when it comes to having given birth and then this baby no longer being with me, but being with her parents. And what I want to say about that is that, just like I said, there's that disconnection. As much as I bonded with this baby in some way because I carried her for, you know, 9 months, the bond that I created with her was always one of friendship. It was never one of ownership of like, this is my baby. It was always like, this is a friend. I'm doing this as a favor to this family, as a friend, and I'm carrying this baby for them as a friend. And so I'm going to return her to her parents because she was never mine to begin with, you know? So I think when people think about surrogacy, they think like, isn't that weird? Like, isn't it feel strange? And I'm like, no, because it made sense to me from the beginning. If I had gone into this with some type of doubt of like, oh, I don't know, I might feel weird giving the baby back, or, you know, a lot of people say like giving up the baby, and it's like, no, I didn't give up a baby. This baby was never mine to begin with. I was holding her, growing her temporarily for her parents because she was always theirs, you know.
What was your favorite part of the whole experience?
I loved pregnancy. I loved being pregnant. I felt so beautiful. I felt so good in my body. And with that pregnancy came so many revelations about myself, just like these layers of myself that I had been hiding and protecting in some cases. They just came, floating out during the pregnancy because I feel like I was tapped into this spiritual element that I had been lacking. And then just the birth itself, the feeling of giving birth to this little human that her parents had prayed and longed for so long. It was just magical. It was really beautiful.
Would you do it again?
I haven't decided yet. I'm still very much recovering. You know, I would love to be pregnant again, but realistically, my body is telling me to take it slow and just really be present. So we'll see. To be determined.
Thank you so very much for coming on today to share your story. This was really special.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate the space.
That was the multidimensional Danelia Arechiga. I hope that your main takeaway from this conversation is that flexibility and adaptability are key skills to hone during labor. I mean, even though she didn't want to, Danelia created spaces to process the changes that were happening to her birth plan, and this allowed her to go into the hospital from a place of readiness. And I also hope you felt how the fetal ejection reflex is a powerful thing. You can connect with Danelia on Instagram at the Multidimensional Mommy, and you can connect with us at Birthful Podcast. Also, we love it when you let us know your biggest takeaway from the episode. So a way to do that is to take a screenshot of this episode right now and post it to your stories, telling us what resonated. Make sure to tag at Birthful Podcast so we can see it and amplify it. You can find the in-depth show notes and transcript of this episode at birthful.com, where you can also learn more about my birth and postpartum preparation classes and download your free postpartum preparation plan. Also, if Birthful has become a go-to resource for you, the best way to support us is by taking any one of my perinatal classes, doing one of my doula workshops, or trying out some of the fantastic and wonderful products made by our sponsors. This is what allows us to continue doing this work. Birthful is created and produced by me, Adriana Lozada, with production assistance from Asia Plati. This episode was produced in part by LWC Studios, Paulina Velasco, Jen Chen, Cedric Wilson, and Kojin Tashiro. Thank you so very much for listening to and sharing Birthful. Be sure to follow us on Good Pods, Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, Spotify, and everywhere you listen. And then come back for more ways to inform your intuition.